I'm part of the best team in Christendom, as far as I know. This is incredible work, and it's group work. It's lots and lots of fun and effort. I am remade almost daily by working for you and with them. So thank you so much. There are really just two ways to go. We're either on the road to Emmaus, or we're on the road to Jerusalem. Have you ever run away? Just thrown up your hands and given up? That's what Cleopas and his companion are up to sometime on Easter Sunday, according to Luke. I get it. Their charismatic leader has been killed in a pitiful display of meanness and fear. Jesus' vision of healing old hurts, of setting the captives free, of widening the circle of God and of human thriving by loving the enemy and the stranger and the neighbor and ourselves was too much to take for the powers that be. Who do they think they are? The powerful murmured. Who wants to be in a club that'll take everybody and accept anybody? They scoffed. How am I going to know that I'm right unless I have them and you to define what's wrong or bad or ugly? So, Cleopas and his friend have sidled out of town with their tail between their legs, probably embarrassed to have felt included, probably sheepish about feeling like maybe they mattered, probably chagrined that that sense, that glimpse of feeling strong was gone. I guess nothing ever changes, they probably muttered to themselves. You see, Emmaus is where we withdraw to when we've lost hope, we don't know what to do anymore. It's the place of escape, of forgetting, of giving up. But then we're told a stranger appears to them and listens to them and then gives to them what each of us longs for, the dignity of our doubts and fears, as well as a larger narrative that frames their suffering in a context of meaning, of dying and rising, of dying and rising. He tells them that the story of Scripture is your story. He says all of life is a gift. He reminds them that you are your brother's keeper, that violence always begets more violence, that we're judged finally not by what we have, but by how we love. And he says that the greatest love is to suffer with and to suffer for someone. And that suffering with and suffering for is another name for God. Later, when they stop and eat together, they realize that the person that's talking to them is no stranger at all. It's Jesus. And he's alive somehow. And then he reminds them that struggling through is the point, not running away. That each of us is called to put the other guy first, that dying and rising, that acting and living with courage, that's what we're called to. That's the pattern of human thriving. And so, borrowing his courage, they turn around and walk back toward Jerusalem, the place that they ran away from, the place of death, the place of fearsome, murderous rage. They ran away from that. But after being with him and discovering him again and eating bread, they borrowed that strength and walked back into the conflict that they knew was there and realized that doing that would help them remember again who they were born to be. What looked like a scene of failure, they realized was a place of resurrection and a cause, a city worth giving their lives for. There really are just two ways to go: toward Emmaus or toward Jerusalem. One defined by fear, and the other liberated by love. Years ago, the people of Redeemer decided to give their lives for the city of Baltimore, to process their fears, our fears, and to gather our resources and walk toward Jerusalem, if you will. And the work of the History Committee this year has reminded us that we stand on the shoulders of leaders, giants, some of them, lay and ordained. They weren't perfect, for sure. They're people of their time, but they rarely settled for good enough. And instead, they stretched to be a place and a people that held themselves accountable to God and to the way. One ancestor told them, "Much has been given to us, so much is expected." And another called them not to build a church for themselves, you know this story, but to build a church for the future. We'll have a lot to process after that retreat that Carrie described, when the History Committee and the past vestry and the current vestry gathers with the staff on retreat in October to digest all that they've discovered. And at that retreat, they'll help to begin to articulate a way forward for all of us, a compelling vision for what's next. And also, there's nothing more exciting to me than the growth of the Redeemer Parish Day School over the last year and 3 years. Always a strong preschool, PDS will soon welcome 170 kids every day, each morning, to a continuous childhood, early childhood education program that serves twos through three third graders. We've rediscovered the gift of this 9-acre campus, with learning and playing occurring everywhere on every inch of ground, wherever two or three are gathered together. We've welcomed new faculty. We've added a school musical and after-school programs, as Chrissy described. We've deepened our partnership with Govan's Elementary School. We've deepened our connection to the Church of the Redeemer by having Rebecca not only lead chapel — Rebecca's not there anymore, but she's somewhere in this room — by having Rebecca not only lead chapel, but also teach in the classrooms weekly. At the parents' request, some PDS parents have asked parish clergy to prepare their children for First Communion, so we're getting busy for that. Over the course of this year, we have seen, even if we didn't realize it, PDS graduates speaking from this lectern, reading to us during Lent, being a part of the choir school of Baltimore, acting as leaders in this place. We've significantly increased our financial aid budget, including $13,000 from the Covenant Fund, as well as $15,000 in the regular budget. The Building Design Committee, which is made up of parishioners and leaders from the school, have worked closely together this year with architects from GWWO and with contractors from Whiting Turner. Together, they've designed an expansion of our current physical plant to create a home for our elementary division. We've outgrown the rooms that we have now. They're going to integrate the new structure with existing buildings through outdoor spaces and walkways. It's still a work in progress as we incorporate all that our programs need in a vision that's both beautiful and affordable. Turns out it takes a lot of time to get that beautiful vision into something that's affordable. But we're on schedule to begin construction in the fall of 2024. We now enter a phase of measuring the interest and financial capacity of all of our community members, current parents and grandparents, past parents, alums, and parishioners. In the coming months, we'll ask each person to consider how they can participate generously as they can. Our opportunity, just like the opportunity 65 years ago when they decided to build this church, not for them, but for the future, our opportunity is that we're building a school that will usher in our future, further engage the community of Baltimore in all of its compelling diversity, and offer a transformative experience to our students and families and those of the next generation. Youth programs as well are thriving. We had 12 young people and 5 adult pilgrims travel to Ireland this summer, and thankfully all 17 of them came back. 19 young people will be confirmed this spring, and teenagers joined the ranks of our lectors during Lent. And think about it. Not only is there ROIG, the youth group, but also Troops 35, and now this year Troop 435. We serve scores of children every month here. They are being shaped by the ministry that you all support every month, month after month. Young adults as well also meet every other week, thanks for the leadership of many of you. Frieda Marie is leading a cohort of adults as in their inquiry classes, so we're going to present adults for confirmation as well. Book groups and Bible studies and midweek services continue to welcome new members, so much so that I've talked to my staff and said, you know what, we need to stop thinking about the climax, the pinnacle of our week as being as happening on Saturday and Sunday. Rather, we are the church and it's happening every day of the week. Think about it. If we're seeing 170 kids and their families at the school Monday through Friday, and we've got people here for Bible studies, both in present and also online, and we're seeing small groups meeting day after day after day, this is wonderful. But there's so much church going on. So much church. And that's happening at a time when we know so many churches are struggling. And we also know that so many people need what you all help us to offer. There's a story to tell about what's happening here that gives you life, that nourishes that in you which cannot be fed in any other way. And I hope you're telling it. Just tell somebody, I'm hungry too, and every now and then I get some piece of nourishment by joining with the people in a variety of ways with and through the Church of the Redeemer. Redeemer parishioners are engaged in meaningful community partnerships as well. In particular, at Govins Elementary School and Johnson Square Elementary School, tutoring and working in the library, reading to students and in the classroom, also donating food and volunteering at Gedco Cares. I would say that it's our partnership with BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, that really focuses our work in being connected deeply with the community. Last October, you'll remember 70 of us participated in a 1,000-person action at Coppin State University. We did that to secure commitments from then-candidate Wes Moore to work with us on our agenda to take action on housing and violence and jobs and health care. And then in February, 50 of us gathered with 300 leaders from across the city and stood in front of Greater Harvest Baptist Church. Actually, we stood in front of a house across the street from Greater Harvest Baptist Church, which is about to fall down. It is part of 14,000 vacant houses in the city of Baltimore, a scandalous scar on our body, which makes us weaker than we might be. And we asked the mayor, along with the governor, to join us. We feel like, through BUILD and our allies, we've got a vision. We've proved it in Johnston Square, we've proved it in Greenmount West, we've proved it in Oliver, that together, leveraging public dollars and private investments and people in this very parish, right, raising money, we can do something about the blight that hurts us so much. If you live in the city of Baltimore and you want to get insurance for your house, and next door to you is a vacant house, let me tell you, it's hard to get insurance. If you live on a block with three vacant houses, no matter how beautiful your house is, the value of your house is about half of what it would otherwise be worth. This is the work that BUILD and our allies are calling us to. In addition, over 100 members of our parish have been trained in one-on-one relational and house meetings over the course of this year. We believe that by inviting the whole congregation, every person who counts themselves as a member, to be part of an ongoing house meeting small group, to be trained for that and then be a part of that, that that will make it not only make us more strong, better able to thrive, more agile to respond to the needs that we encounter, and also better incorporate folks who come to us who are new. If we can say, we've got 50, 55 small groups, and we want you to be a part of one, and we'll just slide you right in so that 9 months later, you're going to have a couple of friends. And then after 9 months of being in that house meeting, we're going to blow all that up and resort you so that you don't just have six friends. We want you to have 12 friends, and then the next year, you'll have 18. You got it? In addition to the $83,000 that you see in our budget that is part of community engagement, add to that contributions from the Covenant Fund. Just this year, $190,000 in investment in Rebuild Metro and $52,000 in investment to partners in the city of Baltimore. $190,000, $52,000, $83,500. You all have made that possible. Our attendance is growing. We're not back where we were. We're not quite there yet, the time before the pandemic, but we're moving in the right direction. We had 981 people for Christmas and 400 on YouTube. That's pretty good. 984 for Easter, 312 now for our average Sunday, including 97 every week on YouTube. Finally, the National Church has asked us to participate in a census this fall, largely because everything has shifted because of the pandemic. We need to know, not just here, but throughout the church, who's here and who's not here, what the demographics are, how best we can serve the world and each other. So we're going to do that probably, well, we're going to do it electronically, but if you would like to fill out the census on paper, you can do that too by request. It's been a very good year. In mid-October, after that vestry staff history committee meeting and retreat, I'm going to go on retreat. Sabbatical. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go on sabbatical from mid-October until February. Christina will serve as our priest in charge, and I'll come back with lots of stories. Mostly, I'll come back with even more thankful for you. Thank you.